Welcome back to Eco Talk, and we're going to switch gears and turn our focus from the people of Kalispell, Montana, depicted in a documentary on public television, as we just spoke with the producer a few moments ago, Patrice O'Neill, and switch to animals and speak with a woman who is in the Bay Area visiting from abroad, from Hong Kong. She is Jill Robinson, and she is the founder and CEO of the Hong Kong-headquartered Animals Asia Foundation, and she's quite known around the world for her groundbreaking work to protect animals in a part of the planet where animal welfare and anti-cruelty laws really don't exist. So thanks for joining us, Jill.
Hello, Betsy. Thank you for asking me.
Tell us how you got involved in saving Asiatic bears, among other great species.
Oh, my goodness. From the second I walked onto a bear farm in 1993, I've never forgot it. It was quite the most horrific thing I'd ever encountered. And I knew nothing about the practice of bear farming, nothing about the species of Asiatic bears, but here were you know, dozens and dozens of them caged in cages so small they couldn't move, with gaping infected holes in their abdomens from where metal catheters protruded. And I learnt later that they were the victims of abuse with traditional Chinese medicine.
Mm. So they're there for medical purposes? I mean, for human medical purposes?
They are. But I have to say that, you know, I think probably many of your listeners would, as I did, want to dismiss and write off the usage of bear bile and think it's, you know, some aphrodisiac or some quack medicine. I learned with some astonishment, in fact, that bear bile really does work, and both Western and Chinese doctors have proof of this. Although, having said that, we do know as well that it can be very cheaply and very easily replaced.
So is there a safer, easier, more humane way to get the bile from the bears?
Oh, goodness me. There are 54 different herbal alternatives in the usage in traditional Chinese medicine, and then there is a very good synthetic alternative as well, where you don't need a bear or indeed any other animal to replace bear bile.
Do you think most people are aware of the plight of the Asiatic bear, among others?
You know, in the United States, I'm afraid not. It seems to be an issue that people really don't believe, I guess. You know, our work in many other countries has a great deal of support, but I think I still have a long way to go in the U.S., and, I you know, really that's why I'm here, to try and raise awareness of the whole issue and get people to join us for the next 3 years at least before China has the Olympic Games in Beijing in 2008 and call for an end to a practice that really has no place in the civilized world.
Now, I see on your bio you're credited with bringing about a historic agreement with the Chinese government. Tell us about that.
Well, it started in 1999 when we were invited by the Chinese government to visit various bear farms in the country. And it was with great satisfaction that we were able to point out all the problems, both from, you know, animal welfare and a humane and an ethical perspective to them. And it led to a year later to a groundbreaking agreement where the Chinese government agreed that we could rescue 500 bears from the worst farms, and we would work together towards ending the practice. I wish that was the end of the story. It's not. There are still some government officials in China that very much want bear farming to continue, but there are other government officials that are on board with us and are helping us to close these horrible farms down and rescue the bears. And to date, we've rescued 185 bears so far. We've closed over 40 bear farms, and we're continuing in our goal, as I say, until the very last bear farm in China closes once and for all.
You've also worked on trying to stop the human consumption of dogs and cats in China, in animal markets, is that correct?
That we have. That's another very a controversial subject, obviously, and one which you know, I've been talking about in the Bay Area. There are millions and millions of dogs and cats killed every year in the country of China, and I have to say that I'm very upset when I hear people, especially in the West, say, oh, well, it's just another culture and, you know, as long as the animals are killed humanely. Well, we've got lots of reasons why we believe that, you know, culture, you know, has to change and should evolve into a more compassionate mindset. It's otherwise slavery, foot binding and cannibalism would all be alive today. We also can prove that no country in the world has ever come up with a humane way of slaughtering dogs and cats. And also, frankly, at the end of the day, that this species deserves better. I mean, having said that, I am a vegetarian, but, you know, we can present very good arguments too why dogs and cats really are our friends and not food. And this is a sort of education process that we've been projecting in China for the last few years. And why why actually today we've got a lot of people on side as a result.
Now, we've been reading a lot, we Americans, about the political and economic changes taking place in China, among others, their new thirst for automobiles and oil. As the culture begins this shift, I guess, towards more democratic ways, do you anticipate that your work as an animal rights, welfare rights activist will go along with that evolution?
Well, it is. I mean, it's changing a lot. You know, China is becoming very open now to the outside world. You know, there's obviously the internet. A lot of the students, the universities have student environmental groups, which are fantastic. These kids are really switched on now and want to learn more and more, and they've just got a thirst for environmental and animal welfare issues, and these are the people that we're targeting now in getting films out there that they can actually see some of the problems, and they can be part of the process to address the situation and improve it for all animal welfare.
So there is growing awareness among the population, because we also hear so much about China's emerging environmental problems, polluted water and air, far worse than what we're facing here. Are there enough people who can, you know, look at that as well as the animals?
Well, as I say, I mean, there is a huge shift now in consciousness in China. There's a lot more sort of intelligence out there because of the internet, and people are more informed and more passionate about doing something about it.
Hmm. So where do you see your work going over the next 5 years?
Oh, goodness. Well, as I say, we have 3 God-given years to the Olympic Games in 2008 in Beijing, and this is what we're hinging most of our campaigns on at the moment. We want to see an end to the bear farming industry, obviously, and certainly towards the ending of the consumption of dogs and cats. And as I say, working with sort of traditional medicine practitioners and students at the universities, working with animal welfare groups, we're certainly seeing a great difference in consciousness and support in our programs. And we're very, very proud to be part of this movement.
Is your work equivalent to what PETA would be in this country? That's People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. The naked women who dress up in fur coats.
Yeah, well, obviously we couldn't. I mean, we have a big bear sanctuary in China, and we can't sort of operate perhaps in the same way as PETA operates. But as I say, there is a huge passion now within the Chinese community in many, many sectors. And goodness, I must say, I mean, years ago we would never have been allowed to have demonstrations. But we do now. We have actually huge, great billboards asking people to treat dogs and cats with respect and see them as our friends. We have empty bear cages outside shopping precincts with big billboards and banners talking about the bear farming industry. You know, this is communist China. We would never have been allowed to do that several years ago. But things are softening up. People are more informed and they want to come on board.
What about using television, which I hear is emerging, because we have here PETA has produced a half-hour documentary that runs on cable stations, and probably not a week goes by where someone doesn't tell me that since they watched that, they stopped eating meat and become vegetarians. I'm not quite ready to watch it because I still eat meat, but I'm working my way towards it, because I know once you see something like that, how cattle are treated,
absolutely,
how chickens are treated, it does change you if you're a sensitive human being.
Yep. Yeah, it really, really does. And you know, this is the other astonishing thing about China. Up until 18 months ago, we couldn't beg the press to come along and report on our programs. But now, you know, something has happened, something has relaxed, and the Chinese journalists are coming to our sanctuary in Chengdu, in southwest China, in droves. They're coming every week. They're reporting the absolute truth about the bear farming industry in horrifically graphic pictures. In fact, they're even going undercover to expose some of these bear farms. I mean, I'm just astonished with how much support, you know, the media in China are giving us, and there has to be a reason for this, and the reason is that they're being allowed to do so by the Chinese government. So it's wonderful news that, you know, we're working now in cooperation with the media too.
And why are you in the U.S. to raise public awareness, I assume, to Americans about this plight? How does it affect the average U.S. citizen, and why should they care?
Well, it is. It's, you know, again, I'm always astonished how people several thousand miles away are driven to help. But, you know, if I think that people are really inspired with this program, because they can see that I think we really will bring it to an end. You know, this is a barbaric medieval practice which has bears in tiny wire cages with holes drilled in their abdomen for a product that can easily be replaced by herbs and synthetics. People really get that here. I'm just inspired by the support that we're getting here as well in the U.S. in my presentations. And I think they can see that once they can help end a practice 7,000 miles away, then, you know, there's also great good that can be done in their own backyard.
Do you have a petition or something you're asking people to sign? And I imagine you have a website?
We do, Betsy. Thank you so much. There is lots and lots of things people can do simply by going onto the Animals Asia website. And it's very easy. It's www.animalsasia.org.
And that's animals with an S, plural.
It is, plural, yeah.
Asia.org. How about writing a book or something like that about this?
My book is on a million post-it notes in a little file in my office.
I can relate to that. My book proposal is due this week. My husband says if I don't see it by the end of the week, I don't believe you're writing a book. You're just saying that.
Exactly that. So one of these days I'll get all those little post-it notes together and I will write a book. It's not the first time I've had that suggested in the U.S. as a way of getting the word out. Obviously, books are eminently important here. So I think I'll probably put that higher up on my to-do list because of you.
Are there other, in our remaining 30 seconds, examples of this going on around the world, or is this the worst example that you're aware of?
Well, bear farming, yes, is going on currently in South Korea and Vietnam, although it's illegal in both countries. And in fact, I'm making a trip to Vietnam in a couple of weeks to again talk with the government about how we can escalate the process of ending it there.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Jill Robinson. She is the founder and CEO of a group called Animals Asia Foundation, headquartered in Hong Kong. You're listening to EcoTalk on Air America Radio. And thanks for joining us. We've got one more great segment coming up for you. It's with the head of the Union of Concerned Scientists talking about a new boycott against Exxon.